Hey, it's Ronnie Davis, and you're listening to Being More, the place to be if you want to learn how to stop eating in ways that make you feel like crap, if you want to end the weight and food war, and start reimagining healthy eating and living. We'll show you how to change your mind, your food world, and your life with less doing and more being.
Talking hunger, specifically three types of hunger, how they influence your eating habits, and why honoring them is key for healthy eating, but also a healthy, peaceful relationship with food and your body. One of my most recent clients came into my program after having spent a number of years in an unbelievably restrictive, almost cult-like eating program that she finally left after it, you know, eventually predictably began causing binge eating, among having a whole host of other, you know, really negative impacts on her and her life. I think she said it was called bright line eating. And I really hesitated to share that because it's such a disgustingly unhealthy program that I think I'd rather a hole in the head than feel like I was giving them any type of extra attention. But I decided that I would share in the hope that warning you against it helps you stay far, far away from it and other really, really toxic, frankly, trauma-inducing programs like it. Before we dive in, I have to again point out why I harp so incessantly on how unhealthy everything we've been taught about what it takes to eat healthy really is. This client I speak of is not unique. Every woman I've ever worked with in over a dozen years have the issues that they have with food in their bodies because of programs exactly like this one. Programs that claim to teach you the, quote, right way to eat and live, but actively cause decades worth of serious harm to mental, emotional, and physical health. Programs like this are the norm in our culture. Disordered eating and eating disorders under the guise of healthy living have become the norm, and I will not shut up about it until they're gone forever, because they are truly destroying decades of our lives. The level of unnecessary pain and suffering that rules and restrictions are causing women everywhere, probably even you, infuriates me. But I digress. Moving on to the point of today's episode, hunger. The client that I spoke of often shares bits of this program theory that she, you know, sort of, it pops up as we're talking, she'll remember certain things that pop up. And so she'll share, you know, some of their theories and favorite buzzwords or buzz phrases as she's working on healing and deprogramming the harmful messages that she learned from her time within it. And one of their favorite taglines is a good example of, you know, a lot of this really harmful programming that we all learn. This is not just something unique to this particular program. We all learn this. Anyway, one of their favorite phrases is that hunger is not an emergency, she says. And admittedly, I've never been in this particular program, so I'm only guessing the meaning behind this line. But it sounds to me a whole lot like, as with most supposedly healthy eating programs, it's suggesting that clients implement willpower and discipline to ignore or resist their hunger cues. And today, I want to explore not only how screwed up and unhealthy that is, but I also want to explore what hunger really is, what it isn't, along with different types of hunger, how you can tell the difference, and the actually normal, natural, healthy way to think about and approach dealing with your hunger. So to start, I want to put the phrase into perspective, because while on some level it's technically true that, you know, for most of us lucky enough not to suffer from food insecurity, there are millions of starving people in the world who would desperately disagree. Hunger absolutely can be, and for some actually is, a life or death emergency. Food is literally life-sustaining, and hunger is not the enemy. It's the vital communication we receive that alerts us when a need is present. It tells us when it's time to eat, how much we need, And even if we listen closely enough, it can tell us what we need. It also tells us a whole host of other things, but more on that in a bit. When she shared that phrase, I suggested she trade the harmful old messaging for an outlook on hunger that's not only more accurate, but also more empowering and actually helpful. So instead of hunger is not an emergency that makes you feel like you should be trying to avoid it or postponing dealing with it, think about it instead as communication. Hunger is not the enemy, it's communication. It's alerting you of a current need. It's your life partner. Treating hunger like it's something that we should be ignoring, fighting, or postponing dealing with, you know, because it's supposedly not an emergency, is not only unhealthy, but it's completely unnatural, downright abusive, and the epitome of diet culture bullshit that we need to stop buying into. It is not promoting health or well-being. Now, you might be thinking at this stage, but Ronnie, you don't understand. I'm hungry all the time. If I don't try to ignore or control my hunger, all I would ever do is eat. And trust me, I get that. I lived it too for years. My hunger used to be so out of control that I pulled candy out of the trash can and ate it. I was so desperate for sweets. I was even once hospitalized for a week because I could not stop eating. So yeah, I get feeling like you're hungry all the time. And I get the fear behind not being able to stop eating or thinking about food that drives feeling like you need to control your hunger. But here's the thing. Even feeling like you're hungry all the time or feeling like you can't stop eating, even those things are okay. Because again, when we learn to welcome and understand our hunger instead of fighting or resisting it, we can learn what those nonstop thoughts or of food or the desires to eat are actually trying to tell us about what we actually need, so that then we can properly honor the underlying needs that are driving it. And when we actually meet the needs that are being communicated through our hunger, the constant nonstop hunger stops. To understand what our hunger is trying to communicate with us, it's important to recognize that there are different types of hunger, and it's all trying to communicate different things. Now, there are a lot of ideas floating around about how many different types of hunger there are and what they are, but I like to keep things as simple as possible. So I really just see them all as coming from one of three places, generally speaking. First, the body, right? Hunger driven by our bodies is the hunger that most people are familiar with and that most people associate with all other types of hunger. This is physical hunger. This type of hunger is driven by a biological need and occurs when the body needs fuel to function properly. It's often accompanied by physical symptoms like your stomach growling and irritability. And interestingly enough, it's often the least common reason we actually eat. When ignored or suppressed, it can lead to binge or overeating. It typically builds up over time and is quickly addressed and or is addressed quickly and easily, rather, by simply listening to and honoring our body's need for food by eating. Physical hunger is a normal, natural, and important signal from our body that communicates our physiological need for energy and nutrients. It is a communication tool that our body uses to let us know when it needs fuel to function properly. By listening to that communication and responding appropriately, we can nourish our body and maintain healthy relationships with not only food, and but our bodies and ourselves. And by honoring that communication, by giving ourselves what it's telling us we need, we're able to actively support our overall health and well-being in the best way possible. And we're less likely to fall into patterns of binge or overeating by ignoring it for so long and letting ourselves get too hungry. Treating hunger like an enemy or fighting to ignore or resist it is actively unhealthy because it forces you to ignore or fight against your individual moment-to-moment needs. not to mention how much it messes up your relationship with food and your body. So in addition to being unable to actually meet your own needs when you're fighting or ignoring or postponing your hunger, it also leads to food cravings, compulsions, binge eating, or other eating disorders, and it can leave you feeling like garbage and negatively affect not only energy levels, but your physical health as a whole, not to mention the levels of guilt, shame, and anxiety it creates around food, all of which negatively affects our mental and emotional health, making it super hard to just enjoy food or feel good about ourselves. And it contributes to self-punishing behaviors rather than self-nurturing ones. So no more ignoring physical hunger or trying to control it or resist it or willpower it away. So the second type is driven from the heart. Hunger driven by the heart is emotional hunger. This is what I think of as emotional hunger. It's driven by your heart. Emotional hunger is a desire to eat or a craving for food that arises from feelings of fear, stress, anxiety, boredom, loneliness, a need for love, self-love or otherwise, and a million other negative emotional states, although positive emotions can also cause it. Emotional hunger is often characterized by a desire for specific types of foods, such as comfort foods, sugary snacks, or salty snacks, and it's typically felt in the chest or throat, even the belly. But if it's felt in the belly, it doesn't feel the same as physical hunger. It's not the same physical sensation of grumbling or growling that physical hunger causes. And this type of hunger is very, very difficult to suppress or ignore, especially if we don't have any other emotion regulation strategies or tools. If we do manage to suppress it, life gets really, really hard pretty fast, because without being able to manage or regulate our emotions, they can consume us. So emotional hunger, emotional eating serves as important a purpose in our lives as physical hunger. It's a tool to cope with or regulate emotions, often the only tool that we've learned through our lives. And so it's just as important, if we don't have any other tools for dealing with negative emotions, it's a tool, and it's serving an important purpose. It's helping to cope with emotions in the only way we know how. Now, does that mean that it's the best way to cope with emotions? Sometimes, perhaps. But no, not always, especially long-term, and especially if it's your only emotional regulation tool. Because while it may temporarily provide a sense of comfort or respite from emotions that can feel too overwhelming to manage, stuffing, numbing, or otherwise avoiding and repressing our feelings doesn't actually help long-term. And this is one of the types of hunger that can actually make us feel hungry all day, every day, because we're experiencing emotions all day, every day. They're inescapable. One day, a client I was on a call with, in the middle of our call, she was recalling a particularly painful childhood memory, and she stopped mid-sentence to comment on how weird it was that she just noticed she was hungry all of a sudden. And she thought that was weird because she had just finished eating before we started our call, so she didn't think that she should be hungry again so soon. We stopped what we were doing and did a, you know, short connection exercise, and I had her explore where she was feeling the hunger in that moment. And when she explored her body, she noticed that it was in her chest. That's emotional hunger. That's heart hunger. When her brain sensed the fear and the pain that was present in that moment as she was remembering this memory, it automatically triggered a need to eat or soothe. To soothe or to numb what she was feeling. And so this is what I mean. Using food to soothe becomes so automatic that we just think we're too weak-willed to stop eating, and we're so disconnected from our bodies that we can't translate the messages that we're getting about what we actually need. When we become conditioned to use food as a coping strategy or an emotional regulation tool, our brains eventually become conditioned to respond to any emotions basically as a problem that's solved by eating. So we feel driven to eat or mindlessly munch. And remember how that autopilot cycle works. When our brains detect a threat, in this case emotions, it searches its memory banks for how it's protected you from that threat in the past, and it drives you straight, in this case, to food. A desire to eat becomes the automatic response anytime an emotion pops up. And many of us, most of the women I've worked with over the years, learn early on that emotions aren't safe. We weren't allowed to feel or express emotions growing up without being either judged, getting in trouble for it, or both. So we learn to numb, suppress, fear, disconnect from stuff, and reject our emotions or our emotional responses. But like hunger, our emotions aren't the enemy. Like all forms of messages from our bodies, they're just communication. They're communicating a need within us. They need to be seen, acknowledged, allowed, felt, and then honored. But when we avoid or stuff them, when we fight, resist, and try to control our hunger, we're abandoning ourselves, rejecting parts of ourselves, and dismissing our current needs. And I think of emotional hunger as heart hunger because I think it represents the place in us that feels and suffers from this abandonment most. Since the beginning of time, our hearts have been seen as the center of our emotions, the place in us that is pure love and acceptance. It's the place in us that tells our truth, that guides us, that allows us to love, accept, and connect with ourselves and others on a meaningful level. But if all we're doing is stuffing, rejecting, and ignoring our emotions, we're turning our backs on those things and abandoning ourselves over and over and over again. So rather than being a space of love and acceptance, our hearts become storage containers for all the pain, fear, grief, hurt, and sadness that we have been stuffing down with food for years. They become sealed up tight. So those emotions, that pain, that sadness, the hurt, the fear can never be allowed out, and nothing else can be allowed in. And in fact, science has actually discovered a physical link between our emotions and heart health. Several studies strongly suggest that certain psychosocial factors like grief, depression, and job loss even can contribute to heart attack and cardiac arrest. Stress may affect risk factors for heart disease high blood pressure. Repressing emotions can have harmful impacts on both our mental and physical health. By causing increased stress, we bottle up our feelings inside, and it can lead to anxiety, depression, and other mental health problems. It can lead to difficulty in communication. It can make it hard to communicate with other people. We become guarded and less likely to share our feelings because we don't even know what they are after a while. This can lead to misunderstandings and breakdowns in relationships. It can lead to physical symptoms, as I talked about a little bit already, but they can also manifest themselves in things like headaches, fatigue, muscle tension, and insomnia. Lowered immune systems. Studies have also shown that prolonged emotional stress can have a negative effect on the immune system, making it more difficult for our bodies to fight off illness and disease. And then obviously, as you know, we're talking about using food to cope with emotions, it can also lead to these negative coping strategies like substance abuse, overeating, or other forms of self-harm. So it's important to find healthy ways to express and manage our emotions outside of food. Again, there's nothing wrong with using food, but if it can't be our only strategy, because then we fall victim to all of these negative effects from it, right? So it's important to find healthy ways to express and manage our emotions so that we can avoid those negative effects. Because no matter how hard we try, we cannot ever escape the fact that we are human. And as humans, we all experience emotions and emotional triggers all day, every day, through our entire lives. So I think of heart hunger as the place in us that is the most desperate to be seen, felt, allowed, accepted, and loved unconditionally. It's the place in us that's screaming, please see me, love me, accept me. It's the insatiable yearning for relief from the negative emotions we're scared to honor and from the pain of the disconnection and self-abandonment that results. Learning to honor this type of hunger is, in more life-affirming ways, was one of the most difficult things that I ever had to learn to do myself in my own life, but it was also the most rewarding because it allows me now to show up for myself and my own unique emotional needs in ways that I never knew possible, I never knew how to do before. And it's allowed me to reconnect with and trust the truth of who I am, beneath the stories, the conditioning, the beliefs, and the patterns, so that I could start moving beyond those things. All those things that had been such an all-consuming source of suffering in my life for so many years by fueling the weight and food obsessions, the self-loathing, the shame, you name it. And so then the last one that I want to talk about is the head. Hunger driven by our heads. This one refers to the autopilot patterns that we develop with food over the course of our lives. There is some overlap with this one and the last one because emotional hunger definitely becomes one of these autopilot patterns, but it's not the only way that we get stuck in patterns with food. So head hunger refers basically to anything driven by our conditioning. It includes emotional eating, but it's not just emotional eating. This type of hunger is driven by our conditioning, our habits, and beyond the emotional eating, it's usually largely driven by the rules that we learn around what we should and shouldn't eat. It's the type of hunger that drives you back to the box of donuts an hour after you just promised yourself you were going to, quote, be good with food today, while you're busy wondering how you got there and admonishing yourself again for screwing up again. Remember the three biggest reasons why we get stuck in compulsive patterns with food. If you've been following me for a while, you've heard me talk about these before. The three biggest reasons we can get stuck in these patterns with food or feel addicted to certain foods. As a reminder, or if you haven't heard me talk about them before, they are restriction, self-punishment, and again, emotions. And so hunger driven by our heads is behind all of these, right? All three of those fall into this category of what I'm calling head hunger. And it's driven almost entirely by years, even decades of our conditioning, subconscious patterns that we're usually not even aware of. And it's the type of hunger behind, again, most compulsive issues with food or feelings of food addiction. Now, this type of hunger is typically almost impossible to ignore because it comes on without warning, and it happens on autopilot, completely mindlessly. And it's behind that, I don't even know why I'm eating this thing, but I can't make myself stop feeling that we all know so well. You feel out of control when you're driven by this type of hunger because you're not present or connected when you're eating from head hunger. Because you're not present or connected, you're not in control. Your conditioning is. I often share the Buddhist short story of a man on a horse. The horse is galloping quickly, and it appears that the man on the horse is going somewhere really important. Another man standing alongside the road shouts to him, "Where are you going?" And the first man replies, "I don't know, ask the horse." In this case, the horse represents our conditioning. When we're driven by this type of hunger, we are in a completely mindless state, disconnected from not only the present moment, but our bodies and our current needs. And we're also disconnected from the decision-making part of our brains. The habit center is fully in control, and we have completely checked out. Logic, reason, rationality, intellect, they've all checked out. It's also the most common reason we tend to eat or overeat, because most of us live in this disconnected, disassociated autopilot state pretty much all day, every day. And as with the others, there are a number of ways that you can recognize this type of hunger, but the simplest is to be present and curious about your thoughts. Typically, this type of hunger starts in your head and is largely driven by your thoughts, especially all of those obsessive, ruminating back and forth types of thoughts over what, when, or how much you should or shouldn't be eating. So, if hunger is communication and we shouldn't be trying to suppress it or resist it, what do you do about it? I am so glad you asked. Whatever type of hunger is showing up for you at any given moment, they are all best addressed, as I teach in ECET, by being present, connected, curious, and intentional. So rather than treating our hunger like an enemy that we need to overcome, fight, resist, or ignore, we have to begin approaching it for what it actually is, communication. We have to turn towards our hunger so that we can start listening to it and honoring it the best way that we can based on whatever type of hunger we're experiencing in this moment. We can only do this when we're present and connected in the moment and in our bodies. When we're curious about what information we're getting, what that information is telling us we actually need, and then when we're being intentional about how we choose to respond to those needs. Intentionally choosing the kindest, most compassionate, and loving choice that we can. It requires being aware of when it happens and learning to rewire the patterns in your brain that's driving it. So, for example, if emotional eating is behind some of your patterns, you'll need to learn new tools and skills for managing emotions without food. If restriction is driving it, you can practice the permission element from ECET. Because it takes time and purposeful, consistent effort to change these patterns with food, it's really helpful first to decide how important it is to you by assessing how negatively your patterns with food are affecting you. So, for example, if you're in the habit of mindlessly grabbing a particular type of sweet once a week or something, when you're in one particular store, and it's not negatively interfering with your health or how it feels to live in your body, it's probably not something that's worth putting the effort into changing. The biggest problem in a situation like that is usually the judgment we carry over the habit itself rather than the actual habit itself. If, on the other hand, you're like I was, and your patterns with food are driving disordered or other unhealthy behaviors that are negatively impacting your health, mental, physical, or emotional, then they're probably worth putting the effort into changing so that you can live the life you deserve free from those things. So changing our patterns with food and weight is not easy, but it is better than the alternative, which is continuing to live at war with ourselves, with food, and with our bodies. And life is way too short and way too beautiful to waste it living like that. All the ways that we've learned to demonize hunger, likewise, when we categorize foods as either good or bad based on their nutritional value or calorie content, all these things that we've learned through all these diets and healthy eating rules and programs is a huge part of why we get stuck in these patterns in the first place, including the feelings of guilt and shame and anxiety around eating, and none of which is normal or healthy, and all of which contributes to or causes massive amounts of suffering through these disordered and unhealthy eating patterns. So when you learned that hunger is the enemy to be controlled, resisted, or ignored, it's a sign of weakness or a lack of willpower. It caused you to feel ashamed or embarrassed about your hunger cues, leading to not only ignoring or suppressing your hunger signals, which, as we've talked about, can cause physiological and psychological harm, including low energy, poor concentration, irritability, and anxiety, but worse, causes you to distrust yourself and your body and to completely disconnect and disassociate from your body entirely. It also perpetuates weight stigma and discrimination, leading to negative self-esteem, body dissatisfaction, and eating disorders, and even worse overall health outcomes. So it's important to remember that every single one of us eats for all of the reasons I have listed today and a 100 others, at least a little bit sometimes, and there is no right or wrong reasons to eat. There's only conditioning that's driving our choices. And conditioning is often either serving our well-being or contributing to our suffering. And conditioning can be changed if it's doing the latter. Also, I'd add that being stuck in conditioning that isn't serving us is not a weakness. It's not lack of willpower or discipline or anything else you've been telling yourself. It's not your fault, and it's not something you can simply will yourself to change. It takes time. It takes learning new ways of being, new skills, practice, and support. And it's so important to adopt a non-judgmental and compassionate approach to food and hunger, where all foods are allowed, and hunger is seen as the natural and welcome form of communication that it is. And responding to it by turning towards it, listening, and then honoring it with kindness and compassion. And this helps to promote a healthier relationship with not only food, but ourselves and our bodies, and then ultimately better physical and mental health outcomes overall. And this is all what I help clients with through my ECET process and wholehearted being, as I've talked about before. Head over to my website if you haven't already and grab a free copy of my PEACE framework to get you started with this non-judgmental and compassionate approach to food and understanding your hunger through wholehearted being. PEACE is a simple-to-follow, 5-step framework I developed to help you practice using this approach, and it is so vital because before you can properly honor your hunger, you must first understand it. Feeling hungry right now? Why? Why do you want to eat that thing? Is it your head, your heart, or your body driving it? PEACE is a simple tool I created to help you begin to answer those questions by helping you get present, connected, curious, and then respond with intention. It works most effectively when implemented together with the entire ECET process, but you can still start practicing with the framework right now for free if you head over and grab the free PDF at www.ecet.online. So thanks for tuning into today's episode on hunger. We've learned that hunger is natural and essential communication about our moment-to-moment individual needs, both physical and emotional, and that it's usually the negative attitudes and beliefs we're taught about hunger that can lead to our unhealthy relationships and patterns with food. We also explored the three different types of hunger: head, heart, and body. Head hunger is when we crave food out of habit or boredom, while heart hunger is an emotional desire for food to soothe, nurture, or comfort. And finally, body hunger is the physical need for sustenance that arises from our body's natural signals. By recognizing the different types of hunger and learning how to best respond to each, we cultivate a healthier, more natural, and intentional approach to eating that truly supports and nurtures our overall health and well-being. Thanks for listening today, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast for more insights on how to live a healthier, happier life free from food and weight obsessions.
You've been listening to Being More with Ronnie Davis. Thanks for tuning in. To learn more about embodied cognitive eating training and access free resources, visit www.ecet.online.